Give me a T.
T.
L.
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 T.
T.
S.
S.
What's that spell?
Let's get it going.
The Linux Link Tech Show is on.
Is on.
Your link to GNU Linux and the latest technology. 2 hours of insightful guests, tech info, and playful banter.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Free software, free speech, open technology,
and open mind.
I love it.
Now, live from the Linux Link Tech Show studios, here are your hosts, Dan, Alan, Pat, and Link. Link it up and take it away.
Link it up. This time without Alan. Alan has the hiv.
Yes, he does.
Okay. Episode.
And Dan's candy, of course.
That's right.
Candy. Welcome, everybody. Another exciting show, the Linux Link Tech Show, episode 272. Wednesday, November 5th, 2008. How you boys doing?
Doing good. Doing good. Wait a minute.
Yeah, we're gonna have to struggle a little bit here to make, you know, get the take up the slack of Alan missing.
I know, it's so hard.
We're gonna miss his weekly contributions.
Yes,
someone will have to drop the F-bomb right away, and then it'll be better.
Get it out of the way.
So, you know, but to take up the slack, we have the master, Steve, from the OpenStreetMap project. How are you doing tonight, Steve?
That's pretty good. How are you doing?
Pretty good ourselves. Looking forward. I've been waiting for a while. So let's get right into it.
I've been chopping at the bit
because I think OpenStreetMap is great. I've been contributing to it. It's fun. But for those listeners out there who do not know what the OpenStreetMap project is, give us a synopsis.
Okay, so there's two easy ways of looking at it. The first one is it's sort of like Wikipedia but for maps. So instead of editing an article or correcting a sentence, you're editing the base map data. So you're adding a road, you're adding a point of interest, you're changing the classification of a road or its name, you're adding buildings, parks, all the base features that make up a map. And just like Wikipedia, it's open and free and anyone can contribute and so on. Another way to look at it is we do exactly what the commercial map providers do when they put data into things like your TomTom on your car dashboard. Except they drive around large, expensive vans and do it in a very sort of top-down, controlled way that also happens to be pretty expensive. And we do pretty much the complete opposite. We have volunteers bottom-up building the same data set.
Now, how long has the OpenStreetMap project been in effect?
So it started in August 2004, so it's 4 years and a couple of months.
And the goal, obviously, is to map the entire world, yes?
Yeah, absolutely. And then Mars after that.
And then Mars, cool. Now, are they actually, like, giving you Mars data to put in there?
Well, we have to go wait for people to go and build roads for a start, but I'm sure...
DK is the canals?
Yeah.
Now, in addition to streets... You're also doing footpaths, bicycle paths, and
absolutely.
Parks.
So exactly. So in the same way that Wikipedia started and tried to replicate an encyclopedia, but then Wikipedia went way beyond that, adding levels of detail that weren't possible with Britannica, for example, or Microsoft Encarta, and also much more up to date. We're doing exactly the same thing with maps. So instead of just having base road data. The kind of thing you get in your TomTom, we go beyond that by letting people add all sorts of features. I mean, we have people mapping every bus stop in cities, every street light. We have people mapping base jumping spots. We have people doing more mundane things like footpaths and cycle paths and so on. But really going a level beyond what you can get commercially.
And then once you have a map, of course, what are the ways that people can access this aside from just the maps going to OpenStreetMap project? Are the maps accessible then for download on the GPS devices?
They are, in fact. So there's multiple ways to get at this data. If you just go to the front page of OpenStreetMap, the pictures that you see are the rendered map data. And everything you see there is community contributed, and that's one way of getting, you know, getting a map. Then if you go to planet.openstreetmap.org, there's data for the entire world. Effectively, it's a dump of OpenStreetMap every week. A very large XML file which contains every bit of data in OpenStreetMap or the most recent snapshot. And then there are diffs provided at like hourly and minutely and so on, so that you can keep up to date with what's happening with the OpenStreetMap data. And from there we have a large subversion repository which will turn that data into all kinds of different formats that you may or may not want to muck about with in databases or things like Garmin GPS devices and so on. If you just want those things just off the bat, then there's a couple of sites that you can download just chunks of the data. There's a Geofabric, that's GeoFabric.de. And that's run by a couple of guys who let you download chunks of the data, say, for example, if you want Germany or Spain, that kind of thing. And there's also download.cloudmade.com, that's cloudmade.com, allows you to download individual countries in several different formats, and one of them is also Garmin, so you can download this stuff straight to your GPS.
So, in looking at the OpenStreetMap data, of course, I've said that I have been contributing to it. In your opinion, well, let's talk about what people would need to contribute to the OpenStreetMap project, and
sure,
kind of some of the stuff that you guys recommend they have, or what devices would you recommend?
Well, the absolute minimum, you don't need anything, because Yahoo allow us to derive work from their aerial imagery. So in effect, you can go into the editor in OpenStreetMap and just start clicking around and add streets and buildings and points of interest and so on. And that all you need is a web browser capable of using Flash, and that's very simple. If you want to go beyond that and start using a GPS, and that's useful where there isn't any aerial imagery or the imagery is too coarse to get things like footpaths, that kind of thing, then pretty much any GPS will do, and you can get them relatively cheaply, like sort of between $150 and $300 probably. One that we use quite a lot is the Garmin eTrex Legend HCX, which is just a very simple commercial off-the-shelf GPS you can get off of Amazon, I think, for $200. And it has a micro SD card on it, so you can load maps onto it. It takes standard AA batteries, has a color screen, and a fairly good GPS receiver. But you can go cheaper than that. There's trade-offs. There's a very large list on our wiki. If you just go to our wiki and search for GPS reviews, there's a very, very large list of GPS devices with their features and pictures of them and so on. And for your audience, it should be noted that getting the data off of these devices is very simple. They either just look like a USB mass storage device to...
Did we lose our guest?
I don't hear him.
Hello.
Oh, hello. Hello?
There we go.
Guys?
Hi. Did you lose me?
Yeah, just for a second, you cut out there.
Okay.
But it's all good now.
Okay. So, yeah, I was saying you can talk to these things fairly easily with Linux. They're fairly cheap. I recommend the eTrex Legend HCX. Pretty much does everything. But you can go a little bit deeper if you want to. And there's a large amount of information on the wiki on how to get started there. But we can, of course, talk through that now as well.
Now, what about people using the Nokia NA10s? Have you, what do you guys feel about those?
I mean, I personally, I mean, I know one person with them. I've not played a lot with it. I mean, I know, for example, I know that there's a lot of pieces of software for J2ME-capable devices that will talk Bluetooth to a GPS puck, and then will either save that data or upload it live over the network. I don't really know what's available on the N810. I think it's got a GPS built into it. That's right, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, so, I mean, anything with a GPS that can spit out data at approximately, you know, once a second is good. Some phones block the GPS because it eats a lot of power and they don't want you competing with their cell phone, cell tower triangulation services, which cost money. And so I think a BlackBerry, for example, only lets you get a fix every 10 seconds if you're a piece of software trying to ask it for a location. But in general, any device will do. Anything that works for you is going to work for OpenStreetMap, just so long as you can get a raw stream of those latitude and longitude and timestamps fairly frequently. And someone's just said on IRC that that people with the 810 use MAMO Mapper, which also lets you view your position on top of OpenStreetMap map tiles. And they're also saying that, yes, it records tracks once a second. So clearly the 810 is good to go.
So you got people out there collecting this data, driving around, bicycling around, running around, walking, boating. Then they can get their track data. Now, I know you can upload it to the web interface, and you can even manage it through the web interface if you want to, but there's some other projects. Like, I've been using JOSM, the Java OpenStreetMap editor, and it's fairly simple. And now, I have a few questions maybe you can answer for me that I had a hard time finding in the Wikipedia as to how information should be tagged, because you go in and when you import your GPS track data, you get a bunch of little dots on the screen.
Yeah.
And then you can trace around those dots, which is very easy to do. But when it comes to actually tagging the data, sometimes I get a little confused there as to exactly how tagging and how tagging should be done and what should be tagged. As what? Now, from what I understand, there's a... we'll talk primarily roads, for instance. There's trunks. I believe that's what it's called, the trunk, for streets. Motorways, trunks, trunk links. Now, I guess a motorway would be equivalent to a highway, yes?
I can't say that I actually know. What I would say is first of all, that to explain to people who might be new what exactly tagging is that in OpenStreetMap, our data model is very simple, that we just have nodes which are points in space. An ordered collection of those nodes is what's called a way. So that might be something like a street or a river. If you make a way which has the same first node and end node, then that's enclosed, and that could be something like the outline of a building or a park or something like that. And then when OpenStreetMap started, I decided not to have a top-down ontology, so we wouldn't define a normal road as type 37B and then a river is 57F or whatever, because the effort that would be required to design that kind of ontology for the entire world would be significant, and it would be just one giant argument about how you classify things. So instead, every object in OpenStreetMap has what's called tags, which are key-value pairs, and you can have an arbitrary number of these. So, for example, a pub would be just a node in space, and its key-value pairs would be, the first one would be amenity pub, so key amenity value pub. And then the second one might be name the jolly mapper, right? And then those two tags are what would define it as a pub, and what the renderer would look at to choose a little pint icon and write the name of the pub on there. Now, taking that further, people, this is a community process, have decided how to tag large numbers of other things. So motorways, freeways, autobahns, and so on are generally tagged as highway motorway. Then their number, so in California here we have the 101, that might be the REF. So that would be REF US 101 northbound maybe. And then you might have a name, which might be Servicewomen's Memorial Highway or something like that. And those three things would define one carriageway of the freeway. Then when you get through a junction, the link that comes off of that would be motorway underscore link, which just says that it's still part of the motorway, but it's probably single lane, and it has a slower speed and so on, and you're going to change classification of roads once you exit it, either to a motorway, either to a freeway or to a normal road. And then some of this is a little bit alien to people in the U.S. because it comes from the U.K., and this is where some of these things were defined. But you guys have a lot better time of it than people in Germany who would like classification slightly differently, and people in Spain slightly differently, and so on. But the peer pressure behind it keeps most people on track. And there's a very large number of these tags, these recommended tags, behind OpenStreetMap, and they're all available on the wiki if you go to wiki.openstreetmap.org and just click on Map Features on the left-hand side. And the Map Features page lists pretty much every sort of agreed-upon tag with a little description, maybe a photo of what the thing represents. So, for example, a footpath is highway footway, roads under construction are highway construction, that kind of thing. With all kinds of classifications for pretty much everything you could possibly try and think of for mapping. But that's just the recommended sort of peer-reviewed way of doing it. If you really want to tag something slightly differently, you're more than welcome to. So if you want to define a new tag, if you just want to add some arbitrary text, that's absolutely available to you. But the peer pressure is that you try and work to this scheme, because if you don't, then the stuff you add isn't going to be shown and rendered on top of the map.
Now,
so can you add new classifications for things then? Like, say I wanted to add a classification for the hoagie guy.
You're going to have to explain to me what that means.
I'll let Dan take care of that.
It's an attraction. It's an attraction in where we used to all live.
Okay. So yes, I mean, you can. I mean, it's very, very open-ended. There's a process on the wiki for defining things and adding them, and you can go to the proposed features page, and there's usually some interesting and weird and wonderful different features that people are proposing. I mean, if I have a look through now, people want to tag the maximum speed of walking on a highway. People are tagging locks on canals. People would want to tag dog walking zones, ice rinks, orphanages, hospices, comedy clubs, farmland. I mean, there's all kinds of stuff here. Guidepost, apparently. I mean, this is a funny one. Someone wants to start tagging areas with what kind of clothing is required. So I presume that on a beach you can get away with less clothing, and on the street you require more. I mean, that's the kind of level of debate that's going on, and it's very easy either to propose new features or to just go ahead and just start entering tags yourself. We certainly don't mind either way.
Here's a very specific question I have. Maybe you can answer for me. Okay. When tagging and laying down a road, if it is a divided road, do you and say you're only driving in one direction on the road, so you only have one direction mapped on this road that you've actually collected data for. Now, when you lay that road down, and you tag it as, say, a trunk or whatever, do you specify that is a one-way road?
Yes.
And so if it's divided, and say it's a highway of both directions have two lanes, so you would only tag your northbound direction as two lanes one way. You wouldn't tag it as four lanes altogether, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's some discussion about this. I mean, I think, for example, on the highway motorway tag, one way is implied, and there's always an implication that the direction of the way implies that, you know, that carriageway is going in that direction. But for me, I always just add one way equals yes or one way equals true as a tag to it, just to make it explicit. I mean, slightly lower classification roads, you know, maybe divided highways in cities which don't have intersections. You know, they have an intersection every block where you might be able to do a U-turn, but there are roads within the block which can only access one side of the highway. I would divide those as well and make those one way. Because as well as this data being used to make pretty maps on the website, it's also intended to be routable. So you're defining the topology of the road there, which is largely why it's tagged as two separate carriageways.
So then if it is if it's not divided, so to speak, and it's like a four-lane highway, but doesn't have a median strip in there or some like grass in the middle, it's just off. Would you tag that then as just a motorway with four lanes, and not specify that it is one way, or would you still
tag?
I
would guess if it's just a four-lane highway with two lanes in each direction, that it wouldn't be a motorway. I would think that would be a primary or secondary or maybe a trunk road. And it's implicit in those things, I think, that they are two-way.
Okay. Now, say you're out there walking, and you're walking along, you're walking on a sidewalk. Obviously, you probably wouldn't map that and tag it as a road. Would you tag it as a... Is there a tag for, like, a sidewalk?
There is, in fact. I mean, in general, sidewalks are implied by that there's a road there. Roads are assumed to have sidewalks. But there is a tag being voted on right now to say whether things have sidewalks or not.
Because that kind of falls into the question that I struggled with as I would go for a walk sometimes over lunch and map the areas around where I work, and I'd say, would I tag this as a road or something else? Because I'm not actually in the road when I'm walking, so the data is going to be a little off as compared to if I was walking down the middle of the road or down the lane of the highway. Wouldn't that essentially, when I uploaded it, if I tagged it as a road, shift the actual location of that information off the road?
It does a little bit. But you have multiple ways around that. The one way is to, you know, walk down one side of the road and then walk the other side on the way back. The other one is you can use Yahoo aerial imagery, if that exists in your area. Or you could just cross the road and cross back, and that will give you the rough width of the road in your GPS trace. And then you know... ...correct. And then with time, I mean, this doesn't all have to be you. I mean, there could be someone else comes along later and helps correct the position slightly. But yeah, definitely. I mean, when we first got the Yahoo aerial imagery, what we noticed was a lot of mappers in Europe go cycling because it's the quickest way to map high-density urban areas, because we don't tend to have gridded cities in Europe, and so there's a lot of cul-de-sacs where you have to do turns in the road to get back out, and then you go down another cul-de-sac and then turn around and so on, and cars aren't the quickest way of doing it. And of course, because these people are cycling, they're always on one side of the road, so you notice that all the roads have been shifted slightly towards that side of the road, and when we got aerial imagery, we noticed that and could use the aerial to correct all the streets a little bit outward.
Okay, so as you get more people contributing to a specific area, and let's say, like, I map an area and someone else comes along and maps the same area, and eventually three or four people map that same area and all upload their data, does it take, like, an aggregate of all that data to maybe get a better position of the road, the accuracy there, or how does that actually work out?
You can, but you would do that as a human interpretive process. So you might come along and notice that three people have been down that road, and if they've all uploaded their GPS traces, you'll be able to get that GPS data and just visually average the road into the middle of the traces. The aggregate works in many ways the same as Wikipedia does. So just many eyeballs looking at this and making small improvements all the time. But there isn't an automated process that magically takes a large amount of GPS data and turns that into a good, or at least positionally accurate, street network. We very much rely on volunteers to do that.
So then what I should do is respect the traces that other people have done and try and lay mine in accordance with them or in accordance with the Yahoo map overlay.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's a back and forth, because someone might have uploaded a trace, but it might have been a particularly bad day for GPS reception, or they might have uploaded the trace but not actually moved the road into position, and there's interplay there. So you should always do what you think is the right thing, I think.
Okay. Now, as I've been going about my area and mapping stuff, I've noticed that there's been a tremendous amount of mapped data in my area. And in fact, there's a lot of mapped data when I took a ride to, I live in Virginia, I took a drive to South Carolina and noticed where my mother-in-law lives that there was a lot of mapping going on. And I thought it was kind of weird that the map where my mother-in-law lives in South Carolina and the map around my place are all have the same author.
Dave Hansen.
Yes, and I was going to wonder, who is this Dave Hansen guy who's just been everywhere and mapped everywhere?
Right. So the data in the United States comes from TIGER. TIGER is a map data set put out by the Census Bureau, and it's public domain. And the reason they make a map is because the Census Bureau needs to know where everybody lives. It's not the best data in the world. It's not always positionally accurate. It's not always topologically accurate, and it can often be quite old. But it is public domain. And Dave Hansen was one of the guys who helped with importing it all, helped write a bot to take the TIGER data in the format from the Census Bureau, parse through it all, and upload it to OpenStreetMap. And that took several months to do it. So that's why that username is on it. What that means is, when you see something that's been edited by Dave Hansen, means that this is raw public domain data from the Census Bureau, and it needs someone to have a look at it to make sure if it's actually right. And it might be wrong in terms of the classification of the road. It might be that there might be a road that's shaped like an S, but the road is actually just a straight line in this data. There's all kinds of things that could be wrong with it. So that's why it's all tagged with him.
All right, that makes sense. Now I know who this Dave Hansen guy is.
I believe he's a Portland-based software developer.
Cool. So Yahoo Maps has allowed you guys to come in, take their area overview and trace over, but not actually use their maps, correct?
Yeah, because they don't own the maps either.
And so I hear that the UK has been mapped pretty thoroughly, yes, the United Kingdom?
You know, it's not complete yet, but it's one of the highest, most well-mapped countries in OpenStreetMap, yeah.
So the UK has been pretty well mapped, and has the large parts of the United States been very well mapped?
Not yet. It's something I'm actively doing, and it's why I live in California now, is to try and kick off OpenStreetMap over here. There's a lot of things that have been done in Europe, like I can tell you about, that we have things like mapping events called mapping parties, and we do talks and distribute leaflets, all that kind of stuff. And what we want to do is take all of those things and try and kick off getting people interested in OpenStreetMap over here. So there are some areas that have been pretty well mapped, like some major cities have had a fair amount of data put into them. You can look at places like Seattle, Portland, San Francisco, New York and Boston and so on. But we're still quite away from having a good, decent community here in the States.
That's cool. I don't know what other questions to ask.
Well, I mean, on that note, I mean, what we do is, I mean, I'm here to help anybody get up and running with OpenStreetMap. So if people want to talk at a Linux user group, or they want to borrow a GPS device, or they want to run a mapping party, or whatever, then I can certainly help with any of that. They just have to drop me an email at steve@asklater.com.
So, with the OpenStreetMap project, how comfortable are you with the accuracy of the maps for putting them on GPS devices?
Well, the way I would phrase that kind of thing is that accuracy question is something that's historically come up with Wikipedia. You know, you're doing a talk and someone says, well, you can never trust this data. And so you just sort of ask the audience, you know, how many people in the last year have used Encyclopedia Britannica or Microsoft Encarta, and you know, you get one or two people put their hands up, and then you say, like, how many people in the last day have used Wikipedia, and it's a sea of hands go up. So that's my sort of fairly short answer, but to expand on it, I mean, I love the data. I believe in the concept of crowdsourcing, and you know, it's not always a perfect, and we haven't completed large sections of the world yet, but I would trust it pretty firmly unless I knew that it was, for example, in the US, just Tiger data that hadn't been fixed by anybody. And you should also weigh this against the fact that it's free. So this data you can do what you like with, and you know, it may or may not be perfect right now, but one, you can fix it, and two, the other option is to go and pay, you know, hundreds of dollars to a commercial map provider for their data. So I would tend to pick OpenStreetMap and get involved and fix it rather than pay someone for some data that I can't change, much as people choose to use Linux and Wikipedia instead of Windows and Encyclopedia Britannica.
I guess the idea, Steve, is everything is up to date and a lot more detailed than what you see even on like Google Maps. Like I'm looking at my local map, and the level of detail is pretty high.
Cool. Whereabouts are you?
I'm over in eastern Pennsylvania.
Right.
And, you know, if you see anything wrong, you can fix it. And the interface is designed on purpose to be like Wikipedia. So you log in, there's a view tab where you're looking at the map. If you want to start fixing things, you just click on edit, and you can start to play around. I'd recommend that if you click on edit and you've not done this before, you just click on when it starts up, tell it to go into play mode so that any mistakes you make won't go straight into the database. But it's designed to be very compelling. It's designed so that people can get started easily. And you know, there should be a health warning on this because a lot of OpenStreetMap is pretty addictive. Once you start doing this, it's sort of like those dot-to-dot puzzles where you follow all the numbers and in the end you've made a picture of something. It can be very addictive trying to complete a map near you and make sure everything's correct. And certainly we find all over the world that once people have got all the roads in, that's just the start, that people want to add all the footpaths, all the parks, all the cycle paths, all the points of interest. I mean, every single mailbox, that kind of thing. So hopefully you guys will get addicted.
What are some of the costs of, like, some of the commercial providers of maps? What do they charge usually to, like, you know, third-party who want to use their stuff in commercial applications?
Well, it depends on the application. And the easiest way to do it is to, you know, these are generally publicly traded companies, so you can find out how much, you know, turnover they make and estimate the number of customers. But for the Google, Yahoos, and Microsoft in the world, it's clearly millions. But they're just essentially just showing a picture of a map. They're not handing over the data. It can be very expensive if you show live GPS data on top of the map, because that's something that you know, people people who do that kind of thing, fleet tracking, people like FedEx, DHL, and so on, they have a lot of money that can pay for that. The GPS data that's on a TomTom is, for example, tends to be more expensive because that's the raw vector data, and the level of detail required is higher because you're not just showing a picture of a map. This stuff also has to be routable. It has to have turn restrictions. It has to be more up to date, that kind of thing. But the retail level, it's depending on the use case, it's tens to hundreds of bucks. But commercially, it can be very, very even frighteningly expensive to do this. And that's partly because the way it's collected, because you have a very expensive infrastructure of fairly well-trained people driving every road in an entire country. That's a hard and expensive thing to do.
I mean, I have to say about the addiction of working with the OpenStreetMap project. Man, you are right on the money about that. And it's addicting. It is a whole lot of fun, and the barrier to entry is so small that anybody, so low that anybody can contribute to this, even if you don't have a GPS device. And just it's a lot of fun just drawing, tracing out the areas and correcting things and filling in areas that aren't there, and just, it's a lot of fun to contribute and to be part of the whole community.
Yes, I'm glad you feel the same way.
Now, anything else you'd like to tell our audience about the OpenStreetMap project?
It's fun, it's free, and you can help. And if anybody has any questions or wants to run an event or wants to talk at a Linux user group, just get in touch.
Now, you obviously have members everywhere, all over the world.
Yeah.
And people that would be willing to come to like user groups and talk to and discuss about it and talk about it.
Yeah.
Do you know approximately how many people you have contributing?
So our user base, if I look now, we right now have 72,000 people in OpenStreetMap, and in any given month, I believe it's currently about 12% of people contribute. So in any given month, there's right now about 7,000 people contributing.
That's awesome. That is awesome. Now, do you yourself use Linux to contribute to the OpenStreetMap project?
So traditionally, I mean, I've been using Linux since about 1998, and I used to be a very heavy Linux user, but I've gone to the dark side and bought a MacBook. So I'm afraid to say. So recently, not so much, but in general, I'm a big fan of Linux, and I would never probably use Apple or Windows, certainly not Windows, as a desktop operating system. But because I tend to live off my laptop and I quite like the hardware, I'm afraid I'm a Mac person at the moment.
We'll forgive you. That's okay.
Yeah. So long as everyone on IRC is nice to me, I don't get kicked or anything.
Now, what do you recommend people use for mapping and tracing and everything? Do you prefer the Java interface or the going straight through the web? There's a few other applications too.
Yeah, I mean I primarily use Potlatch, which is the Flash-based editor that's on the front page of OpenStreetMap. So when you click edit, it's a Flash app that boots up, grabs aerial imagery from Yahoo, grabs vector data from OpenStreetMap, and allows you to start playing around in a fairly clean and playful kind of way. That's designed to be sort of the base level for people to get started with. That's really useful to just do a few simple edits here and there, and even some longer term tasks. But then if you want something to be a bit more productive, if you want something with a bit of a broader feature set, then there's JOSM, which is just like Potlatch, everything is open source, and it's a fairly large Java project now, which looks like a desktop GIS application. And you know, that allows you to do a lot more with the data, the kinds of processing and stuff. And when you do a lot of mapping, it can be a bit easier for doing repetitive tasks. And it also, you know, it's not embedded in a website. It's not expecting a live internet connection and stuff like that. So you can use it offline. But I tend to use a combination of both of those, but there are other editors, of course, as well.
Cool. Awesome. Steve, I want to thank you for coming on this week and talking to us and giving us a little more information about the OpenStreetMap project. I really appreciate it. It's a great project, and I hope that we'll gain some more people contributing any way that they can.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for your time. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. You're willing to stay on if you like. We're probably going to move on to other things, or if you have places you need to be, we understand. And we appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule.
Thanks. I actually need to go, but thanks for your time.
All right. Thanks a lot, Steve. Have a good day.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Well, there we have it. The OpenStreetMap project is fun and exciting and well worth time and effort put into it.
Sounds pretty cool. I wish I had a GPS that I could use to play with that kind of stuff. Unfortunately, I don't. It doesn't work with my Mio, you know?
Does your Mio, doesn't do track data, does it?
No, it doesn't. But it does have, like, a removable SD card that has maps on it, and I was trying to go through the website to find out if there's a way for me to, like, use those. But I don't see any offhand, maybe if I dug a little further. Then again, he says, you know, that the U.S. doesn't map very well anyway. But I'm sure Ralph Philly it is, right? So
I'm sure the larger cities are.
I'll tell you what, the places that I've been to, and like I said, my mother-in-law lives out in the sticks of, and here we go, bumfuck for Alan. South Carolina, in Chester, South Carolina, and that place was pretty well mapped. So,
just,
you know,
made our Alan quota.
Yeah, so given the fact that that area was well mapped, I'm sure where you are is probably well mapped too.
You would think so. But I don't know. I'll have to check into it further. I'm really interested to see if I can use those maps. And, you know, because eventually the maps that I have on my Mio are going to be not worth very much. They're going to be sort of outdated. And, you know, I like the little unit. So it would be cool if I could get more up-to-date maps and eventually, I guess, without having to spend an arm and a leg on them, you know.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. I have a Garmin, and I need to get some. I actually have not put any maps on it, and sometimes when we took it with us when we drove up to OLF, and there was a good part of the time that we were just driving through the plains. You know, there was no road on the map.
Nothing. You're off the map.
Yeah, and we're like, well, we're driving in nowhere. There's no road here, but there is Columbus right up there, and we're heading towards it. So I guess we're going to be okay. That just means I need to
right
download
some
maps.
Right,
yeah, just download
some maps. Alan's GPS had a brain fart a couple times when we were driving. Like one time, I forget where we were. I think we were in Ohio. We're just driving along on the highway, and all of a sudden the thing tells us to get off at the next exit. So
it was West Virginia, wasn't it?
Was it West Virginia? I forget.
Get off the highway and like take some back road or some shit. I thought we were in for a, you know, some sort of a religious experience.
we're gonna drive up to some like satanic cult in the middle of the woods.
Yeah, we were following Chad's directions, and then we were like, this can't be right, you know, because it was like essentially we were driving up the one road, one highway, and it would connect to another highway, and it was like we were on the opposite end of the square, so we'd actually have to go all the way up and make a 90-degree like turn, and it would take us into Columbus. Somewhere along the line, we missed a road. And so we decided that this looked like a major road heading off to the bisect it. And that's when we turned off the road that we were on, that's when we were in the sticks driving through the plains. It was a major highway, but it wasn't on the GPS device. But we were just, we followed it all the way up to Columbus, and it probably saved us about an hour.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind getting a GPS unit sometime down the road. They come down in price quite a bit.
Oh, dude, mine is like worth its weight in gold, you know? I mean, really.
But yours runs better Windows, doesn't it?
I don't care what it runs. You know? I really don't. Don't care. I do not care what that thing runs. That thing is worth its weight in gold, I'm telling you.
Does yours have games on it?
No.
Geocaching?
A lot of these newer ones play multimedia files. They play videos and audio.
No, mine's like an old one. The only thing it does is like tell you where the hell you are and where you're going, which is pretty much what I wanted it for. So.
Like mine's got some like games that incorporate the GPS data and stuff. So like it would. There's a maze on here where you have to follow the directions in the maze to get through it. And it's based on GPS, the geographical
data. You use
data.
It on Chad for, like, hide the sausage and stuff?
Well, for some reason, that's always telling him to go south. But, yeah, and it also does a lot of stuff with geocaching, too, which is something that we haven't done yet, but sounds like a lot of fun.
What are you going to hide, Dan? A fart jar?
A hoagie.
He's going to hide the salami.
I'm going to geocache to the hoagie guy. You son of a bitch, man. You brought it. He's like, tag the hoagie.
<That in.
laughs> I'm like, man, he doesn't know what the hell the hoagie guy is.
Probably doesn't know what the hoagie is.
I think if we're going to have a guest on the show, that they should have to know something about our show. You know, we should grill them first. Like, okay, who's the hoagie guy? Where did Dan shit in a bag? You know,
I should mark that.
You gotta
on
know that.
Next time you're in Bethlehem, you could mark it off.
Yeah, I'll put the track. This is where you know what I should. I wonder if that's mapped on the OpenStreetMap project. Let me see. Did I close out my browser? I'll bring that up and look. I can give you the exact coordinates.
Well, there should be, like, you know, there should be a mark on there for, you know, the hoagie guy, Jim, and we can make it a famous thing.
Dan's old house.
Yeah. Wouldn't that be freaky to the new owners, like, weird Linux people standing outside taking pictures of the house?
Right? Can I come in? Damn. So, hey, you guys both running Intrepid now, finally?
Two machines nope. I'm running, my server and my laptop.
Nope, I'm still running 804. I haven't had the ambition or the time to upgrade anything yet.
Yeah, I haven't
upgraded my brains in at work
my
with
workstation
expect scripts. What's expect? Oh, surely you jest. Expect is just what it says. It's a program/language that you can use for many, well, I'm not even going to say open source operating systems, for a lot of different operating systems where you can script with this and it will read and respond to prompts for you.
So it's almost like an automation, like a testing automation thing.
Yeah, only it'll read, like I said, it reads prompts and responds for you depending on what they say and all that stuff. But the problem is it's TCL, which is a pain in the ass, and I'm trying to pass a variable name through it, and it keeps trying to use that variable as a local variable and pass the information from the local variable that doesn't exist, and there's no way to escape it, and it drives me up the frickin' wall. So I've been pissing with that all day. This is my brain rest from doing that, and then I go back to doing it tomorrow. just so that I can write a script to check and make sure everybody has their firewall on like they're supposed to.
Expect is pretty handy.
It is when it does what you want it to. You know? But, like, the stuff that I've been trying to get it to do, I've been having to do, like, a workaround for it. My workaround is to write my little firewall checker thing in another script and then write this giant expect script, which SCPs the firewall checker script to each server and then goes back in an SSH and runs the damn script and pushes it out to a log, you know. And it's just a pain in the butt. I mean, it works. But still, it's a pain in the butt. And I mean, I know the guys on IRC are asking me, well, why don't you use, like, SSH keys and stuff like that? Well, you really can't do that with a lot of servers if you want to keep them secure because, you know, it's a security model. If you have 200-300 servers and you have one server or one machine that has SSH keys to all the other servers so that it can run commands on them, if that one machine gets compromised, it has immediate access to all the other machines.
Pretty much.
And you can't do that, and you can't trust that it's, like, you can't lock SSH down. You just can't do that. So if you're running the SSH, running a command on there, you have to have an account on the other machine. If you have an account on the other machine, you're done, you know. You have a local access to the machine. It's like an open door policy. But so the only real way to keep your machines secure, right, is to have different passwords and not allow SSH keys. Unless, of course, you're not attached to the internet or something like that. But it's just, you know, it's a pain in the butt. It's one of those administration things. But, I mean, it's a lot of fun trying to write scripts around stuff like that and get things to do what they're supposed to. But it's can be very frustrating at times, too.
I can understand that. I can understand that. You know, I'll tell you what. The power and the tool set that is just available to you for processing data and manipulating data and doing things under Linux and BSD is out of this world. I mean, there's a handful of different ways to do. Oh, there's like at least four or five different ways to do everything you want to do. You know what I mean? To take a log file and pull out some information out of the log file, to process that, to get some IDs out of there, to throw into a MySQL script, to get some more information. I mean, there are just tons of ways to do it, and it's just so much fun and so powerful. Know what I'm saying?
Yep.
That's just awesome. I love it. Makes things so easy. I don't know.
I got something for you guys.
What's that?
My company is allowing us to go volunteer at a charity up to 2 days a year where they'll pay us a full salary, like we're at work, and they'll even donate up to $250 in cash to that charity. So I've been looking around, like, if, you know, people who go to Ohio Linux Fest, they're familiar with, was it Free Geek? There's a Free Geek chapter in Columbus. Now, what these people do is they take, like, old machines, they recycle them, they install Linux on them, and then what they do is they'll have, like, you know, families, low-income families that need the machines. They'll come in, make them work a little bit, you know, doing the same thing, putting together old machines, you know, and then they'll give them a machine after so many hours of community service.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I was thinking of maybe doing that, but I don't think there are any chapters, you know, close by, unfortunately.
Well, there's a gentleman by the name of Randy Pletcher would love to have you.
I knew you were going to bring that up.
That's not freaky, man. That's helping.
I don't want to spend my donated time installing Windows 3.1.
That's not fun. That's a job. That's not even a job. That's a punishment. That was a punishment.
It is. Yeah. It is.
Maybe you guys should go back in time and then just, you know, give an overview of what the hell you guys are talking about and who is Randy Plesser.
Oh man.
Go ahead, Link. You're the guy that roped me into that. You roped everybody in.
I slipped through that one.
Yeah. You made it. You were smart.
I skated.
Well, you know, you gotta be careful with these things because there's, you know, he's the kind of guy who would just love to sue the hell out of me for defamation.
Well, just tell the story.
Well, you know what? To be quite honest, the goals of the organization were admirable.
Absolutely.
The implementation was left a whole lot to be desired. This is how not to run Free Geek. But go ahead,
yeah,
sorry.
It was
a Free Geek-like organization.
Yeah, it was like a Free Geek kind of thing. It's like a Linux for Kids thing where you take old computers and you, you know, reframe them and get them spec'd a little bit better and give them, you know, put Linux on it and give them out to underprivileged kids. And like Dan says, you know, very admirable.
Sounds admirable on the surface.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a very good thing to be involved with, and a lot of us jumped on the bandwagon and...
Well,
he
guy came to the log, and he was asking for volunteers, basically.
We all got in on it and worked very hard and didn't see the fruition of the project, I guess. There was a lot of political posturing going on and things like that, and our lug and that organization had a slight fallout.
Well, basically, you went there and you worked on these machines. You cleaned them up. You know, got them working. You installed, you know, whatever Linux distribution guys were using at the time.
Dan and I custom did a Linux distribution for this stuff. Yeah.
And this is going back a while ago.
Oh yeah.
We're talking years ago.
Quite a few.
Well, what are we talking, Mike? 2001.
Pioneering thing at the time. Yeah, I think it was. It was a long time ago.
Was it 2001 or it had to be
a long time ago, man.
It had to be after 2000. I don't even know. I don't even see their
website is down.
I don't even remember.
Yeah, it ended up with a lot of name calling and stuff like that, and I took my leave and was
cease and desist
letter.
Know,
very closely followed by. Damn near everybody else, so.
Well, you guys were in there, you know, going and doing all the hard work, and this person, now this is my perspective from the outside, it seemed like this guy wasn't really doing much, except, you know, trying to take all the credit, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, to give a different perspective on that, he was doing a lot of stuff behind the scenes to facilitate space and organizational stuff. He also pitched in and helped out with, you know, the physical aspects of. See, what had happened, and I don't. Did we ever tell this story?
I think we might have a long time ago.
What had happened was, you know, I get a call one day from Link, who's like, "Hey, we got a business proposition." He's on a conference call with Randy, who had a great idea, and. You know, they were like, and it was a really good idea. And he was like, you know, the idea was, let's take these computers, let's get, let's help get Linux out there, and let's contribute to the community. And what had happened was, it was kind of, you know, he was... I don't want to say he was dishonest or disingenuous, because I don't necessarily think he was at the beginning there, but what he had done, and he had been a pretty shrewd businessman at this, is he solicited assistance from everywhere he could, and he had gotten Microsoft to donate, like, what, was it 100 copies of Windows 2000?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah. But Windows 2000 could not be installed on these machines.
We're talking 386s, 486s, stuff like that.
Yeah, low-end Pentiums. I think the best machine was like a Pentium 233.
This is like 7 years ago, so.
This was a while ago. So what we had was we had a large collection of, you know, for lack of better words, junk, essentially. I mean, it was like businesses were unloading their old systems. Hard drive sizes ran from anywhere like 300 megabytes up to a gig and a half. I don't think there was much more than, maybe some of them were close to 1.9 gigs. So we had this mismatch of hardware that did or did not work, and we were set up in two different locations. One was an old police substation, which was a house in like the worst part of town.
There's like drug dealers and prostitutes walking around outside.
There was like, you had to park in like this church parking lot that was nearby and walk to the house, and it was just like filled with computers and monitors and all sorts of stuff. There was pretty much no room to work in there. You know, you could get like two computers up on the bench that they had there, but you know, there was really no room to work. And they were trying to find space to do a mass build and configuration, which they kind of found in a church community center, I think it was, or was it in a church? It was in this like large meeting room or whatever in a church.
It was a classroom, yeah.
It was a classroom.
Church classroom,
right.
Yep.
And you can imagine that this classroom was soon filled up by all these computers, and power was at a premium where we had strips running all over the place off of extension cords. There was absolutely no internet access whatsoever. So we couldn't do any lookup or research or download any drivers or get support. Before we got the ball rolling, we got together. We built this customized distribution based on Vector Linux called Vector for Kids. We got that all done in like, what was it? We talked about starting this in October. By December, we had this version of Vector Linux that was running.
Yep.
And
I didn't even
working.
Think it was that long, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it was working great. We had an install for it, which worked flawlessly. The only problem was the hardware that we were installing on was completely unreliable. And the CD-ROM drives were like first-generation CD-ROM drives that were busted up, and mm-hmm. most of them didn't work properly. So if you tried to do a traditional install, we had it, you just slip the disk in and answer a few questions and it would install. 9 times out of 10, the CD-ROM drive would flake out on you and you get errors. We tried to find
over to hard drive imaging, right?
Yeah, we tried to find an easy way to image the hard drives, but we were dealing with hard drives that were different sizes. I mean, there was like no two hard drives were the same. So it was, and at the time, there really wasn't any imaging software for Linux.
So it was pretty much a manual process to do the installs on every single machine then.
Yeah, so essentially what we had gotten it down to is I think there were like 3 or 4 of us working at a shot. You know, mm-hmm. we'd take a machine. Actually, we would take hard drives, and we would just do a copy. What we had come down to is we were doing a copy of the data from one hard drive to the other. Then we had a mm-hmm. disk that you would slip in there and run the disk, and it would install the bootloader and configure it all to be able to boot off the hard drive. In the process of doing this, after we had, you know, we were cranking these out, we were actually taking the disks home and doing them on our home computers, the copying to the disks. So we'd bring them in, and then we'd have to pull a system and fire the system up with the disk in it and then troubleshoot what was wrong with the hardware. So we'd end up with situations
trying to get
where, like,
work.
Yeah. Yeah, you would have, like, different video cards. You would have memory that didn't work, a busted floppy drive or something, you know, bits and pieces that didn't work. So we had, who was your friend Link? That was just, he did a fantastic job of just organizing all the hardware so that if you need a different memory, you just take it over, and he'd have the memory you wanted. What was his name?
Oh, which one?
The one guy that was coming there for
a while.
I brought
a couple different people with me, so.
He wasn't there for, he did a great job of organizing it. Unfortunately,
Jesse?
Yeah, Jesse.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, we had done all this. We really busted our ass for a good 2 months. I mean, we were putting in, like, more than 40 hours a week there. It was, like, 2 or 3 days after work we were there. You know, all day
and
Saturday,
then all weekend,
all day
yeah.
Sunday, yeah, all night Friday. And we were busting our ass to get these out because they wanted, like, 120 of these things to, in the first round. So the plan was mm-hmm. we get all these built, they would do a class for the kids that were going to get these. The kids would come in with their parents and they'd sit down for a class in front of the computer, and when they were done with the class, they'd take the computer home with us to teach them how to use the computer. And as we got towards the end of February, it's when the ball started to drop here. I had gone to Mexico on a vacation, and over that span of my vacation, there was going to be a write-up in the newspaper about the whole project. And I remember logging in at an internet cafe, checking my email, because I was excited to read this article, and I just, you know, the email that you had, like, posted, I think, to the list, Link, because you were one of the first people to read the article, like, you were really pissed. Because it had no mention of Linux, it had no mention of the lug, it had no mention of the work that the lug had thrown in here to do this.
Right, and our lug was the entire workforce of this thing, you know what I mean? Other than a small administration piece, like, every computer that was going anywhere had gone through one of my lug members' fingers. And we got nothing.
Yeah, I remember reading the article and thinking that as well. I remember it pretty much, you know, Randy was like the focal point of the article. It gave all the credit to him.
And
understandably, you guys are understandably. And Microsoft,
and,
yeah.
And Microsoft, yeah.
Yep.
I mean, none of the computers were even going out with Microsoft on them. But, yeah, Microsoft was thanked in there for their generous donation. And the lug, who had done all the work, was given no mention at all. So I was, you know, you can understand I was slightly irritated.
So, the excuse that was given us for this was it was an oversight. The person who had done the interviews and collected the data was not the person who wrote the article. It was an oversight. It was apologies were made. And, you know, we just kept chugging along. And when it came time to start beginning the classes, we started having organizational meetings. And Link and I would show up at these organizational meetings. And we'd have our part done, and the people that were supposed to teach the classes had no idea about the operating system, about Linux, or the operating system that we had put together. They had never even looked at the machines, right? And they were supposed to be teaching the class and getting documentation together. So, you know, there was a push towards us to not only build these machines, but then to create this documentation that they could teach from.
Right.
And we basically said, no. Sit down and use the computers yourselves and, you know, prepare for the class. We don't have time to do this. And that kind of never went anywhere. Right? So as they started running these classes on a Saturday and distributing these computers, there was a lot of confusion, I think, and the people who were teaching the classes didn't really know the operating system behind it. And but these computers were going out. Kids really liked them. There was another article that went out, I think, in another magazine that, again, talked about...
Didn't mention us, yeah.
Yeah, and didn't mention us. The idea was we were supposed to have a dedicated place for storage and building these systems. The church that we were working at had gotten to the point of being unusable. There was no internet access. There was very cramped quarters. the hardware that we were working with was scattered. They were supposed to be getting in a couple hundred computers from the Allentown School District, or maybe it was 1,000, I don't know, that were decent machines, a lot better than what we were working with, but we didn't have the space for them, right? So we're trying to find a place for the space. The idea was that what we had done was a trial run, was to show that this is doable and would be able to produce a way to get some financial backing. They were looking to get a nonprofit
status, right?
Yeah.
And he was talking about a grant or something at some point, wasn't he?
Mm-hmm. I mean, the ultimate goal of this organization was to secure a building so that they can run out of this building computer training classes, computer clubs, and all sorts of stuff, and give back to the community. And the way that it would be financed was through recycling.
Yeah, very free geek-like.
Extremely free geek. But so as the first round wound down, the initial idea was that we weren't going to start the second round of the building till the summer. And I think this was like close to the end of March. And because we didn't have space. And there was an organizational meeting that we had that Link and I really, you know, took the time to prepare, give our, idea of how things went, and offer suggestions. And essentially what we said is, you know, you need to get a bigger space, you need to get more people, because, you know, you've really burned out everybody that was working on this. And also the people who are doing the training classes need to step up and learn.
Need to learn the operating system.
And essentially they looked at us and said, screw you.
Yeah, we don't have to do anything your way, and if you don't like it, you can leave, and we'll just go ahead with putting Microsoft on all the machines and give them out.
Yeah, and they also turned around and said that what we're going to do now, since the beta was a success, we're going to turn around and we're going to start another build process in April. And we want you guys, you know, back in, building every day. We want to do it, you know, 7 days a week of building so that we can have another 100 or so computers ready to go by May. You know, and we're like, no. Yeah, it's not gonna work. And then that was the night then after that meeting that he laid into you in the mailing list and called you a dick.
Yep.
I remember that. Small dick, wasn't it?
Call me a lot of things, yeah.
Yeah, so he laid in the Link. Link said he was done with it. You know, I was like,
He laid into me because I, in the meeting, told him the way things would work and told him that the way he was doing things would not work. And he laid into me because he said that I was taking over his, quote-unquote, organization. And I told him that it was never really his to begin with, that all the work that was done by my people. And that just, you know, escalated things, and there was a giant blow-up from there.
But, so you guys walked away from it. What has happened to this organization?
No, that's not what happened, though. Link said he was done with it. I stuck around a little longer because, I still felt what was going on was good, and I was kind of hoping that, you know, I kept talking.
You stuck around for the TV show, yeah.
I kept talking to Randy. I said, "Look, man, you got to bring Link back because this isn't going to work without Link. Go apologize for what you did because what you did was really crap." And he's like, "Yeah, I'm going to call him. I'll do it." And we started doing some more building and stuff. And about a week and a half, 2 weeks later, he's like, "Hey, you know, do you really want to promote Linux? You want to do X, Y, and Z? Why don't you come out to the telethon for the public broadcasting station in the PBS in the area. Come on out. Work the phones. We'll get you some TV time. You can talk about Linux and the project." And, you know, I went out there, and I knew what was going to happen, but I just wanted to see it again firsthand that we would get screwed.
Not only did you know what was going to happen, Dan, you called me before you left for the place and told me exactly what was going to happen.
And what I did from the place, Randy was going up to talk on the television to do an interview, and he took the guy next to me, who was from Air Products, And he walked up there. I called Link and I said, turn on PBS, man. You got to watch. We're about to get screwed again. And sure enough, he went on PBS in the interview. And what he specifically said is, you know, Computers for Kids is, you know, organization to get computers into the hands of the underprivileged kids. We're working, you know, we have really great sponsors. One of our big sponsors is Air Products. You know, and this is a guy from Air Products
Microsoft.
Making it happen. And he said, we've been getting Microsoft, donations from Microsoft to get, you know, these computers in their hands. Kids, no mention of Linux, no mention of the lug. You find out that the guy who was doing all this was looking for a seat on the school board. I think Randy was looking for a seat on another school board. I don't know what the deal was. He basically, you know, that was it.
It's basically a springboard for his own political aspirations.
Possibly. Mm-hmm. After I left, I got home and I called Randy up and I said, look, man, you screwed us again. You never called Link. I'm done. I don't want anything to do with it. He's like, all right, fine, whatever. I wish you. And I'm like, you know, I just feel like we've been used and you just keep doing this over and over again. First time, you know, I can understand. Fool me once. Shame on you. Fool me twice. Shame on me. I was out. Because he never made up with Link and he kept saying he would. And I mean, it's, you know, and that was it for about, what, 2 months?
Yep.
How long was Randy there? Randy's one of the guys from the lug. He was there a while, wasn't he?
Oh, yeah. Well, Randy
he gave him money. That's why he stuck around.
Yeah, he was
didn't
there.
No, it was
time.
Joe that gave him money, right?
Yeah, Joe gave him money. Randy was there for, like, at least a year afterwards.
Yeah, he was there a while.
But, like, 3 months, about 2-3 months later, we got cease and desist letters in the mail demanding that we take down the website that we, the web services that we provided them, the mailing list and stuff like that, demanded all copies of everything and that we return any hardware that we had, relating to the project. And, you know, we basically, we did what we did and said, you know, we never want to see you again or talk to you. And
the RC bug says we should have thrown him a blanket party.
I don't know, but you know what? You know what I still have? You know what I still have, Link, in my email? I still have in my email. Hold on. I still have in my email from May 8th, 2005. Gentlemen, I first wanted to see how both of you and how you are doing. I wanted to see if we can forget our past differences and wipe the slate clean and begin over. Please do not get hostile here. This is a message of burying the past and beginning again. So he wanted us to come back to the project about 2 years later. And I think we said nope.
I seem to remember forwarding in that same cease and desist letter.
Yeah. Yeah, this is my response. What was my response? Randy, those closest to me feel that I'm far too trusting, and perhaps I agree. But when my trust has been violated, it is extremely hard to regain. Your actions in the past have not only burned your bridges with me, but were followed up with threat of lawsuit. Perhaps I am a lesser man for not being able to forgive and forget so easily, but alas, that is the case. Furthermore, while my personal affront stings, I was even more disappointed by watching my friends and colleagues who took the time out of their lives to assist your ventures suffer the same disrespect. Now, I fear CFK USA will have to march on without me. There's a wonderful website, www.linuxiso.org, that already has distros available for download. Furthermore, linuxquestion.org replicates this service. All the LTSP documentation is online. I see no reason for replicating such information. There is a Linux SIG that would better suited for running your Linux education classes. Yep. Finally, your website falls apart in Firefox. What's more, it does not even validate as compliant with the HTML 4.0.1 standards. I recommend you fix this. Perhaps this link may be of assistance. Validator.w3.org.
Well, what was this website done in, like front page or something?
Oh, yes. It was horrible.
It was either done in Word or front page.
Dude, somebody should find it in Wayback and post it on the IRC. It was really horrible.
Yeah, their website is down. I don't know if they're still active or not.
Yeah, I don't know.
The last I heard about that guy Randy was he was ghost hunting in some restaurant not too far from me down the road over here.
Really?
And he got his name into the newspaper again. Yeah, this is like last year or the year before. Link probably
remembers.
Oh, I
think you had mentioned something about that.
I remember that, yeah.
But that, gentlemen and gracious listeners, is how you don't run a ThinkGeek organization. And I blame Link for it all.
It was one of those, you know, could have been a cool thing that ended up being a pain in the ass.
The moral of the story
is
the road to hell is paved with good intentions.
Yeah, it could have been a really cool thing, and you know,
absolutely, could have been a free geek.
In my defense, I have started some really cool things. I mean, Dan and I started the Lehigh Valley Lug, which I understand is pretty much defunct itself at this point in time. But we did the CFK thing. We've done the Linux Link Tech Show, right?
Yes. It's been a lot of really good things.
I would consider
Apple Lovers Lehigh Valley.
Yeah, absolutely, man.
Yeah. Link was instrumental in getting the new Apple store opened up.
Yeah, they opened it up an hour and a half away from me, just for me.
That's it, because they knew you wanted to drive.
Just for me. Because the one right next door to me in King of Prussia, well, that's just too damn close. I don't like that.
Yeah. But, you know.
Well, anyway, back to what originally was saying. If there is an organization that's like FreeGeek that's into doing something similar to this where they're installing machines, I will happily come work for you for a couple of days, and my company would probably also donate some cash. But you got to be on the up and up. It's got to be a non-profit. And I don't want to be installing Windows.
Why not?
Because I've got better things to do with my time.
You are just an open source bigot, man.
Yep. Elitist bastard. There was some organization, I think, down
arrogant
in...
Arrogant Linux elitist, yeah.
I think in your neck of the woods, Link, maybe even further out towards Amish country out there.
Where are you going with this, man? There's a lot of organizations out here.
Like FreeGeek type place.
Well...
Ephedra?
There's got to be something like that around Philly, I would imagine, you know?
I looked and I didn't see anything. I didn't see anything in New Jersey either. If anyone knows, like, a FreeGeek type, like, organization that's within an hour and a half of Lehigh Valley in Pennsylvania, I will definitely come work for you for a couple days.
There's got to be something. Has to be.
Shoot us an email to techshow@thelinuxlink.net.
FreeGeek.
I mean, it's a great idea. You know, the whole concept behind it, you know, is you get some recycled machines, you clean them up, you put some Linux on there, you get people to come in and work for a bit, you teach them about the OS, and they get a full working machine. It's a win-win for everybody.
Yep.
Damn it.
What?
Where's the nationality settings? Somehow my keyboard is not set properly.
In what manner?
United Kingdom? Why is my keyboard set to United Kingdom? How'd that happen?
You dog peeing your computer again?
No, I'm setting up my wife's system with Ubuntu. Now let's see if that. Wonder if I have to log out for that to take effect. Probably. How did that happen? Ah, there we go. I need to get the VI full installed. All right, gentlemen, what else?
That's it for me. I'm pretty much spent. And I have to pee really bad, too, so.
Well, I took Dave Yates' recommendation. I installed the CBR pager on my Nokia. And I'm enjoying some comics on there.
What are you reading?
The Watchmen.
You enjoying that?
I'll be right back, guys.
Yes, very nice. I actually have a copy of the book. So that's getting made into a movie, by the way.
Yeah, that's coming out March 8th, I think it is, or March 4th.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing that. I finally got around to seeing Iron Man.
Isn't that a great movie?
It's awesome, man. They have these kiosks in the local stores and supermarkets. It's called Redbox, and basically what it is, it's like this computer kiosk where you can rent videos from, DVDs, and they're like $1 a night. It's pretty awesome. And they've got like all new titles and stuff, man. It's pretty decent.
I have not tried that. What is that called? Redbox or something?
Redbox, yeah. For $1 a night, man, you can't beat it.
No, you can't. Now, how does that work then? You have to, like, sign up with their service or something?
The only thing you got to give them is an email address. And when you rent the movie, you got to give them swipe your credit card or a debit card. And that's it. And what it is there's a one-night minimum, $1. You can keep it for longer, but you'll get charged $1 every night that you decide to keep it. And after 25 days, they'll just charge you, and then you'll keep the video.
Wait, if they'll charge you if you don't return the video?
Yeah, eventually after so many days, they'll just charge you, like, I forget what the amount is, and you just keep the video. But that's kind of retarded, you know?
Yeah.
But I would imagine, like, the video stores would be hating these things. You know, Blockbuster Video is pretty damn expensive. Have you rented a movie from Blockbuster recently?
No, I haven't rented a movie in God knows how long.
It's like almost $5 a rental. It's really expensive. Now, there's a small place near me that I used to go to. It was 48 Hours Video. I still go in there once in a blue moon. They were originally pretty cheap. They were like, I think they were $1 of rental too, but they upped it. I think they're up to like $3 now. But these red boxes, you know, granted they don't have the full selection that you have in a video store, but they have a pretty decent catalog that they you can rent from. You know, a lot of new titles, and it's good.
Cool.
And it's convenient. It's in the supermarket. You know, I'm in the supermarket, you know, a couple days a week, so it's not a big deal.
Sweetness.
So what the hell are you watching over there, Dan Flipper?
I don't know what they're at.
I'm enjoying the soundtrack.
Yeah, some kind of Disney show. They gotta actually get to bed. I'll tell you. They're off today.
Does the local school district require you to buy a copy of Microsoft Office for your kids?
No. Not at all. Actually, my kids are more than satisfied using OpenOffice.
Have you had a chance to install the new OpenOffice yet?
No, I have not done that yet. I want to. I've been meaning.
What good are you, man?
I really suck. JZA would have my head. And it's shameful. I'm actually trying to configure my wife's Triple E PC right here. Because that's the way, she's going to like it. Know what I'm saying?
I don't know. I've heard some stories about it regarding Asus. I heard one story that at some point the smallest machine they're going to have is going to be a 10-inch screen, and that by default it's going to be Windows XP as the default OS.
Yeah, I keep hearing that kind of crap too, but I don't know. I don't know. Who knows?
I don't know. I've seen some of those netbooks like Best Buy and stuff, and they're all like the Windows XP versions and stuff.
Man, that's weird. I've been talking to you guys for like 15 minutes, and I just finally figured out that apparently nobody could hear me.
No, we couldn't hear you.
I was like, you know, this conversation is awful one-sided, man.
We're just ignoring you.
And finally I just gave in to saying, hello, hello, hello. Nobody answered me. I figured, all right. Even if Dan and Pat were both ignoring me, somebody on the IRC would say hello back, you know?
You know, here's a question I have for you guys, and this has come up in topics with some regularity, is, and this is a big to-do, particularly with Helios, the promotion of Linux by organizations and businesses that use Linux. There's a lot of people, and I think rightly, feel that Linux promotion, businesses should be promoting Linux. And giving some advertisement to Linux, even, you know, particularly because they use it to further their business models. You know, that we need more publicity behind Linux, and that we should look to IBM, Dell, HP, and everybody to advertise. I mean, what's your feelings on that?
I don't think some of these companies will advertise it unless they're paid. You know, you look at you know, if you get the Dell catalog in the mail, you open it up and it says, you know, Dell recommends you running Microsoft Vista on all their computers. They don't do that because they feel like it and really believe that. They do that because they get paid a lot of money to do that. Now, on the flip side, on the more recent catalogs, I think the last one that I got, they actually advertise their Mini 9 laptop, that the fact that it has Ubuntu on it.
Right.
You know, I think they offer three versions of that machine. You know, a low-end model, a middle-end model, and a high-end model. And I believe the low-end and the middle versions run Linux. You know, by default, that's what's on there. If you want to run XP on it, you have to get, like, you know, the high-end one.
Because they need the high-end one.
Yeah, you need more memory and more space.
I would like to see high-end ones being offered with Linux installed, but what can you do? But, you know, one of the things that has crossed my mind and troubled me with regards to Linux promotion and who actually should be promoting Linux is I find it is kind of a catch-22 in some respects, because while I think it's great to promote Linux, I think one of the problems that we have with the promotion of Linux is that, first and foremost, it would be great to turn on television and see an ad for Ubuntu. That would be wonderful. But, and for Ubuntu itself to produce an ad and be on TV almost doesn't make much sense because of return on investment. I don't feel that gearing, you know, Linux commercials for specific distributions are going to do any good on television targeting Joe User, because Joe User is not going to have easy access to a machine with Linux pre-installed. And I don't believe that Joe User is capable or should be. I mean, capable, yes, if they do the research, but they're not going to take the time and effort to do an install of any OS, let alone Linux. It's more difficult than the average user is willing to commit to. And that, you know, I've stated I don't feel that as a shortcoming of Linux. I don't think any OS is installable by the Joe user. You know, they are equally difficult to install. But what I'm saying is, you know, it would be great if we did see promotion and advertising by Dell and IBM for systems that they have running Linux instead of them being relegated.
How about HP?
Or HP too.
That's the one that pisses me off the most, because HP is doing their new netbook, which looks absolutely fantastic, by the way. Like, I want one. The new plastic version of their netbook looks awesome. I would love to get my hands on one.
Is that the hot pink
their
one?
Website. No. It's the black plastic. It's like the one that everybody's winning at the Ohio Linux Fest.
Oh, you mean like Aaron and the other guy?
You know, they have their new model that's coming out is instead of like the metal kind of thing, which weighs down a little bit and it collects fingerprints, this has like this textured black plastic thing going on, kind of like my wife's compact laptop. And it looks phenomenal, and I would love to get one, but you go to their website, and it's just like the Dell thing. You go there, and it says HP recommends running Windows, whatever the hell it is, on all their products.
It's buried. You
can't even drill down into their website and pick Linux. Like, you can go down and pick your specs for the laptop. You can't even drill down in there and pick Linux and your specification for the laptop. However, I know that they're selling this thing with SUSE on it. Like, how the hell are you supposed to get one? Why can't they even have an option on their website where it says that you could pick... You know what I mean? It's going against everything Linux. Linux is giving them an operating system that they can make money off of, and they won't even let you pick the damn thing on their website as an option.
It's they're not even making a half-ass effort, is what you're saying.
There's nothing. Nothing coming out of them at all. Dell, at least, will let you pick Linux, you know?
Yeah, if you know it's there, you'll find it. What it really should be is, you know, it should be one interface. You go in, you configure the machine, and you select what operating system you want.
Yeah.
And the story.
Or you can just go to a cool company like Acer or Asus, which don't seem to have a problem with Linux. And
System 76.
Thing, you know? Yeah, System 76.
The reason. There's smaller vendors out there that are really into the Linux thing.
Yeah, but they're smaller vendors. Like Asus and Acer are not small vendors at all.
No, they're pretty big companies.
They're pretty big name vendors, and they're... You know, they have jumped on the, and I totally appreciate the fact that they've jumped on the bandwagon with the Linux stuff, and they're, you know, riding it for all it's worth. And it seems that this whole netbook revolution thing has a lot to do with that too, because you're looking for something that does a lot with a little bit of resources. And Linux really fits the bill for that. Especially with the, and I hear a lot of people, why not just pay the $20 extra and get the netbook that has the hard drive and the extra memory and stuff like that? And the whole thing behind netbook is you want something that doesn't have a hard drive so that you can carry it around and bang it around in your bag or your purse or whatever it is.
Your man bag.
Yeah, your man bag or in Pat's case his purse. You don't want to, you know, you don't want to be messing the hard drive up by weebling it around like that, you know. And so you do solid state so that nothing gets messed up on it.
Right. Plus, it's quiet. It's cool.
It's cool. Yeah. It is cool. They're less power hungry, all that kind of stuff. And it's really a cool way to go. So if you're buying it, you know, if you're buying a netbook and getting 120 gig hard drive so you can run XP on it, you're really losing out in several different ways, you know? I think you completely missed the boat on the whole point. But that's just me. I mean,
right.
My thoughts.
Your thoughts, not hers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I just, I think promotion needs to be done and needs to be done right. And not at the, and that's the difficult thing. I don't know.
Where do you put your Ace of Stand in your man bag? Your man purse?
In my attaché.
Fanny pack? You jam it into the fanny pack?
No, I have my picture of Chad Wallenberg and Dave Yates in my fanny pack. but I don't have, no, I usually carry it with me in my, I don't know, what the hell is this thing called? What is this called? What is that?
What are you holding on to, Dan? I'm afraid to
ask. I know, we can't see.
I have a messenger bag.
I'm afraid to ask, yeah.
Yeah, I have a messenger bag.
Man, purse is what the wife says. Now.
Jesus Christ. Oh, my goodness, my goodness. What time is it? It's almost quitting time, huh? I don't even have a song for tonight.
You should find one.
Did you upload a song, Pat?
No, I haven't.
I'll go get a song then. What else, gentlemen? When's the new Slackware coming out?
I don't know. I don't know, but I, you know, the new... Red Hat 5.3 beta is out. I haven't tried it yet, but I'm undecided whether or not I really want to try it. Because here's the deal, right? I probably would like to try it, but the thing is, if you want to try it, you have to have a license, right? And I have licenses that I could use for work to try the beta on this thing, but somehow it just seems wrong to me to have a license to try a beta product, you know? Maybe it's just me procrastinating again or whatever, but that kind of irritates me.
The version of FreeBSD came out.
Subscriber. Yeah?
Brian from the Linux Action Show, I think, was complaining about that... It's not an easy install for people who want something desktop-oriented, I guess, was his point.
A FreeBSD? FreeBSD has never been an easy install.
Yeah, it's a server install. You're not expected to have an easy go at it.
Well, no, it's
you got to read the documentation.
It's a CLI install. Yeah, it's a CLI install, but I have... You know, I've been using the BSDs for years and years and years. And my opinion of FreeBSD's installer is it's just a little bit ass backwards. Just the slightest little bit. Like, the way the menus are nested, you know what I mean? Like, Slackware has this CLI installer, but the menus are not nested the way that they are in FreeBSD. Slackware's menus kind of follow a chronological order. Step by step for you to go down, you do this one, and then you go down and do that one, and then you go down and do the next one. In FreeBSD, they're not like that. They're like, you do this first one, and then you have to back out of the first one, and then find the next one, and then you have to back out of that menu, and then you find the next one, and you have to back out of that one. And you sort of, have the tendency almost to lose your place in where you're at or why exactly you keep ending up in the same damn menu. And, you know, it would be a little bit better if they followed a slightly different order in their menu system. Not that FreeBSD is bad. I mean, it's pretty good for, you know,
a server.
For what it is, yeah. Well, it's FreeBSD. If you want to run BSD for a desktop and you don't want to consider OS X, then FreeBSD is probably a good one to run for your desktop. There's that PCBSD too, which is supposed to be pretty fancy. Excuse me, but I haven't tried it yet, so I can't give you firsthand. NetBSD runs fine on a desktop. Always like NetBSD. NetBSD being an early sponsor of our login and the show, even, you know, Wasabi. So NetBSD is fantastic, but some people like they like FreeBSD better for the PC kind of stuff. And you know, have at it, dude. I just wish they would change the installer a little bit. That's all. I blame it on Pat.
I do, too.
It's all my fault.
You could fix that, dude. It's BSD. You could take the whole damn code and make the changes to the menu and have Pat BSD. I would run Pat BSD. Would you run Pat BSD?
Damn straight I would.
All right, there's two already. Who else in IRC would run Pat BSD? Pat can fix it. Right? We can start a whole new thing right now. Just nail it right down. There will be a Pat BSD. We can have a Pat BSD developer team. The whole thing. I nominate Pat for our project lead.
The only problem with that is I would have to start going to the BSD conferences.
Well, what? Have you seen, like, you've seen the BSD chicks? You've seen the BSD chicks.
Oh, those Brazilians?
Hey, oh, man, yeah.
There's everybody loves Brilliant.
Conferences for it. Yeah. So, now you got, look at everybody on the IRC saying, I'd run a Pat BSD. I think we should do it.
Yeah, I wouldn't charge for it.
What are you going to do?
Gonna wrap it up, boys? What do you say?
All right.
Next week we're talking to the Drupal guys.
Yes, and I suspect we will.
Will they make a cream for that?
We'll also have Wallen Baby.
That means Chad's gonna be on here again.
Yeah, because he's the one that knows Drupal best.
He's the Drupal fanboy.
Drupal, Drupal, Drupal. Drivel, drivel, drivel.
Yeah.
The nose on IRC says he'd do a Pat Buntu.
Pat Buntu, yeah. Jay Lindsay's asking, does it have a comic book reader? Yeah, CBR pager. Free.
All right. Ah.
So what scary music do you have for us this week, Dan?
Get the Pat BFD.
I'm gonna drink the Jono Kool-Aid because it was the easiest thing to grab, and have another severed fifth.
Now is this one gonna make me crap my pants?
I hope so. Shouldn't it? Shouldn't they all?
Yes. Well, what song did you pick?
The last one on the album called "Enslaved by Pain." So, everybody can enjoy. And I'm trying to think of what the hell I want to do to my wife's system. I don't know. All right, gentlemen, if that's it.
We're going to wrap it up.
Yes, we will. Anything else, or?
That's it. Go install Linpus on your wife's computer system.
Linpus.
Yeah. I wonder if that's any good. I'd be interested in trying that.
Dude, look at the website for it. It really looks good. I would like to install it on a junk machine somewhere, but I just have not had the opportunity to do so yet.
Yeah. All right. Well, you do that and tell us what it's like.
Yeah. Something.
Yeah.
You might need to see a doctor after Olympus. We'll get the Olympus fixed. Give you a shot or something.
A little cream. Yeah, fix it right up.
Penicillin.
All right, people. Let me play us out of here.
Wait a second.
What?
Before you do, Dan, we just got an email. OdeToDan.org. I can't wait to listen to this one from Bill Kovach.
Oh, we did?
It just came in.
Oh, you... Shoot, you know what? Actually, I do have a different song this week. Let me see here. Keep talking while I'm doing this crap down.
Perfect from your mouth, Dan. The other one...
Oh, no way. You're going to have to play that, Dan. Did you get it in your email? Just pull it right over and play that one.
Yes, give me a second. Wait.
Funny.
Alright, hold on.
What will Dan be known for?
Hold on a minute. Dun, 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 dun. All right, I will play that. What the heck?
What
direct? Oh, I'm in the wrong directory, I think. I gotta pull it over to my laptop. Okay, here we go. Hold on. Oh, well, Jono, you'll have to wait till next week.
Yes, we'll play Jono next week.
I got to move it over to my laptop now. Hold on.
Still waiting for Jono to send me the moon over Columbus.
Yeah, he told that on us.
I have such grandiose plans for that.
I wrote to him asking.
I wrote to him before, too, and he doesn't check his email or he ignores mine or something like that. Bastard. Listen to this, Jono. Answer your damn email. We'll find you. We have secret TLLTS agents all over the world. Will hunt you down in your BFD, in your severed filth.
All right, hold on.
You should
punch him right in the mouth. I got two songs here we'll play. Make everybody happy. Here we go. Where is the one? Ah, here it is. Okay, here we go, people. Sorry for the delay there. Sorry. Here we go. This is from... Who is this from?
It's from Bill.
Bill Kovach.
Bill Kovach. All right. Thank you, Bill. I look forward to being maligned. Let's hear it. Here we go. Thank you, everybody. Here we go.
You're so good at it, though, Dan, you know?
The problem is not the sound effects from your mouth, Dan. It's the other ones that you generate that we have a problem with.
That's not just sound effects. That's smell of it. I got this, like, cloud of nauseous vapors all around me.
What are you going to do if you hold that in all day long? You know what I mean? When people say it's like a guy thing to fart. It's not a guy thing. Everybody does it. Tell me somebody who says they don't fart, and I will show you a liar.
Fart.
Just don't fart again, man.
Please.
That's inevitable. That's like asking it not to rain.
I think the neighbors will
we might even light strange. Some and take pictures. You never know.
Did you ever light a fart?
No, I didn't, but I watched one
that's
of my roommates.
That's hard to do.
Dude, I watched one of my roommates do it one time, and he lit it and burned his butt.
It's hard to do.
So.
Dan's been practicing for a long time.
I've tried it. It's hard.
Don't try this at home, kids.
It's hard to coordinate it. Yeah. You actually need. You should have two people. One person light and the other person fart.
No, I don't think so.
Well,
you,
yeah.
Didn't you just have like one of those long, like you know, the campfire lighters, the long matches?
Well, that's not like the point. It doesn't matter. I mean, it's getting it back there so you don't burn yourself in the process of doing it.
Okay.
You know, what if you're going to do it, in front of a mirror. Then you got to worry about that whole reversing your, the whole aspect that you have to reverse your movement. You know how you get that intestinal distress when you can start feeling it, like, going up your body and into your neck and
your teeth
start to hurt a little bit there and you start to get a little sweaty getting to that stage.
Right, when you got to get a cushion. Oh, that's nasty. God. Dan, how can you smell the microphone after you do that? That's gross. You know, when you're an IT guy, after a while, you tend to lose your ass,
Yes.
And when all you have is, like, the two hip bones of your ass that stick out over a stretch piece of skin, and you sit on a freaking wooden chair for an hour.
You could have had the padded chair.
Ass hurts. Because Pat sucks.
Look at all the chicks outside my window. What are they doing? What are they doing? What are they doing? Running around in shorts. There's a chick that looks like a lesbian.
Wow, 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 wow.
What are they on the ceiling?
When college is out, where do they hide? During the day, freaking me out when I walk past the jungle gym and they're staring at me. I don't know what to say. I look at them and I'm like, what are you looking at? Freaks the wife out too. Creepy girls with their scowls. Creepy girls. They're thin so they don't have no jowls. I wanna run. Run, run, run from the girls. They scare me. Hanging out on the jungle gym. My kids wanna play there. But it's creepy teenage girls hanging out there. Giving me the evil eye. Evil eye. Evil eye. Creepy girls. Freaking me out. Creepy girls, tell them to get the hell out. They should have a law. Keep the creepy girls inside. I don't want to see them staring at me. Creepy, 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 creepy girls with the big bug eyes and the nice curls. Blonde hair, brunettes, all colors.
Like hairnets.
Creepy girls eating potato chips, drinking a bottle of Sprite. Give me that look when I walk by. I want to hide. What are they thinking about? Creepy, creepy girls. Wish they go away. Creepy, creepy girls. Looking at my apartment today. Walking up and down my street. Creepy girls.
Oh. Oh, creepy girls.
come back to me. Creepy, creepy girls, the fingers so thin, looking so cute. Don't tell my wife I said that, I might get in trouble. Then have to register every time I move, but there's no way I'm gonna do that,
cause I ain't stupid. Maybe Pat would,
maybe Alan would,
I don't think Link would.
Where the hell is everybody?
Oh, it's about time.
I'm back.
Yeah. Everybody was like, where's Pat?
How does it sound, man?
That sounds wonderful now.
I just got an email from Campbell. He gave me the number to give him a call at.
All right.
I'm gonna go call them now, okay?
Oh, my beer's in the other area. Go ahead, you do that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Creepy girls coming to your neighborhood. Wanna run and hide. They're gonna kill you. Beat your face. They're gonna kill you with their scowls and their bitchiness and their hormones and their moods. And I know one day my little daughter Paige, she's gonna be one of them creepy girls. All the boys say
cooties.
I'd like to tell you about a time when I first saw Dave Yates. He was coming up over this grassy hill in a Civic, and the sun was just coming right over top of that hill too, and it's like he just drove out of the sun into my life. It was amazing. It was the most beautiful day I could imagine. The sky was so blue, I don't think there was a cloud in sight. And he drove up to me and he said, hey, what's up?
Hey, what's up, man?
So we can paint anything we want?
Anything at all.
How about if I paint your fine ass? Yeah, with my tongue brush. Shut up. Just shut up. It's over.
And that was it, everybody. Now you can go about your merry way. Shut your face. Everybody's gone. That song chased them away. Well, you guys have a great week, and we'll see you next week. Have one. Bye. I know that was
not
me.
Not me.
It's me. It was me.
All right.
What? Who maketh the French kiss? Pat maketh the French kiss. Pat maketh the Frenchy kiss go yum.
I don't know what the fuck you're talking about, dude.
Neither do I.
He's Connect. Saying that he wants to lick your mouth.
Oh, yeah.
Boy, you sure got a pretty mouth.
Squeal like a pig. Say, wee!
Pat sure got a pretty mouth.
Sure got a pretty mouth.
Now, this is pissing me off, all right? They're talking in the IRC about Linpus. Ask me if I still run it. I still run it on my my netbook, right? So I go to the site so that I can give them the URL, and I'm looking at the... First of all, they change the freaking website. Like, they got to change it every day or something like that. Every time I go to it, it looks different. Like, completely different. So I'm looking at it now. And I'm following the download links, and I'm looking under applications, right? And it's saying that it's got, like, Thunderbird for the mail client, and FileZilla, and none of that shit is on mine. That's not fair.
It's because you're the early testers.
What the frick is that all about, man? What else have they got on there that I don't like?
That's what happens when you're an early adopter.
Bastard.
All the cool stuff comes out after you get it.
What are you adopting again? I didn't hear what you were saying there. I was too busy smoking crack.
Maybe they just figured out that, you know, that their mail client is a suck thing. Probably is. I don't like it. Oh, and they got Skype, too. That I don't have on my... I mean, granted, you know, they're just a download away, but... Come on, you know? It's not like I bought mine, like... Hot off the freaking, hot off the assembly line. I don't know.
Hot off the assembly line. Damn, it's hot over in this house. The cat looking at me.
Probably wants you to put some pants on.
No, I got pants on, but I don't have a shirt. I'm rednecking it tonight. I should probably take my pants off.
Dan's going to be on an episode of Cops in the next couple weeks.
you see me running between a pack of creepy girls out in front of my apartment with a... I'm drinking a can of Milwaukee's Best. I'm already there, man. Shirtless, Milwaukee's Best.
Go ahead, run outside and take pictures of yourself screaming yeehaw.
Yeehaw!
Just standing out in the middle there in the big grassy area. Mm-hmm. And then I'll start yelling at my neighbors. You son of a bitches!
Oh, speaking of that, man, I saw this really cool accident in the parking lot of the train station today when I got off the train. I think it's really funny. And, you know, I don't like to capitalize on people's misfortune, but some people are just so damn funny about it. You know what I mean? Like, this, obviously, just a minor little fender bender thing. Both these people were parked. They started their cars up, and one just, like, ran into the back end of the one in front of her. Just two women, you know, and the girl in the front car flipped out, man. Completely lost it. She was just, like, screaming and waving her hand. They couldn't even... I didn't even think there was a scratch, you know what I mean? It couldn't have been a dent or anything like that. It's just a 5-mile-an-hour impact. And this chick was losing it. Screaming, fuck you, what the fuck are you doing? What are you fucking doing? You know, it's crazy. Screaming and waving her hands at the chick in the other car. I'm calling the cops, give me your insurance information right now, blah, 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 blah. Fuck you. It was really funny, man. I'm like, dude, you know, I don't even have that much energy to expend, you know, after work. This is a brand new fucking Pontiac! Oh, it was, man. It was really funny, man. I had to laugh. I'm sure for her it wasn't funny, but for me I thought it was hysterical.
Probably the best humor
really
I get is the homeless people. What?
Oh, yeah? we get a lot of them in Philly, too.
We call the little, you know, do you have, like, little, as you're walking down the street, that have, like, little trees and stuff, like little areas where they have some trees and little flowers and stuff planted?
Well, they have, like, a tree sticking out of the sidewalk kind of thing every now and then.
When they come through and clean those areas, we call that cleaning the homeless litter boxes.
Clean of the litter boxes. Well, they don't do very much of that. It smells like that around Market Street in Philly sometimes.
Like a litter box?
But you don't often see any of the things that would cause it to be that way, because it's right in front of Market East, which is this giant mall. So mostly the homeless people go in there in Market East when it's raining, and they go in there when they use the bathroom and stuff like that. So
yeah,
pretty much it's functional in there.
At least they use the bathroom. I remember when I used to work in New York City, man, I used to get on the subway over at the 34th Street station, and
mm-hmm.
you'd come off onto the platform, and there'd be some like homeless person taking a dump right there in front of you. You know, it's like the first thing you want to see at, like, you know, 6:30 in the morning.
I remember going to New York City and just seeing, like, pissing all over the place, you know. That was always great fun. Public urination. You were lucky if they were pissing outside of their pants, you know.
Beautiful.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Just like the smell of the subway in New York, that's, you know, reason to convert right there, I guess. Look at that. Dave Sexy Yates is on the IRC already.
Is he there, or is he just like... Oh, he is speaking.
Yeah, well, he's typing, yeah.
Bop, 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 bop,
bop. No, you know what I want to know is how come every time I call into the show now, 4 out of 5 times I get this answer machine thing, like a fax machine? Is your box over there set to receive faxes?
No, not that I'm aware of.
When I call in with my phone, it, you know, beeps at me and goes into the receiving faxes mode thing.
I didn't do it.
I would show you, but you'd have to, you know, drive here from Virginia. It's hard for me to let you listen because, you know, if I go to do that, it's already disconnected and stuff. What are you going to do?
Cry.
Is the show started? Why is it all these dead spots? Ugh. The show hasn't started yet. Relax. I'm very cranky tonight. Not enough fiber.
The anal plug isn't seated just right?
No.
It's pinching you a little bit? Little sand in your mangina.
Yeah, but that sand turns into a pearl.
Yeah.
If you walk around enough.
Yeah. It's chafing me. I got a question for you guys. My computer, when I move the mouse around, it goes vroom, vroom, vroom. You guys ever have that happen? I'm not entirely sure why the hell it does that. It makes like really quiet race car noises. What the hell is that?
Where's Alan? He's got the HIV again?
Alan's got the HIV, yeah. I'm not feeling well either, but, you know, the other option is for me to spend time with my family, so Here I am. David says that's an also thing. I don't freaking like it. Somebody should fix that crap.
Get off my lawn!
Race car noises with my mouse. Damn them. What the hell they think they are? They should make little squeaky noises for your mouse, you know. Mice don't make race car noises. What the hell is wrong with them?
Hello?
Hello?
He dropped out a sec.
I'm still here. Is it an integrated sound card? I have no freaking idea, and I'm not climbing down there. I have had this computer for like 2 years now, and honestly, I just don't freaking remember. I think I might find out if it's an integrated sound card, if it keeps annoying me with a little vroom every time, because I probably would just rip the damn thing out and kill it. The more I sit here, the more annoyed I get with it. I probably will have to, like... You know what? If I turn my speakers off, it doesn't do that, so maybe I'll just do that. Yeah, on your Dell that you got, your Dell laptop, you didn't get the NVIDIA, right?
No, I didn't because of the problems that we were reporting.
See, now, I mine has the NVIDIA on it. Works like a top.
Well, it's not everybody that's affected by it. I think they set the failure rates like 20%, I think.
Yeah, but we got like three of those laptops, and the NVIDIA works on all of them. And it works like a top, man.
The issue is that it doesn't work. The issue is that it overheating, and eventually they die.
Oh, well, it's a work laptop. If it dies, they send me a new one, you know.
Exactly.
That's cool.
I'm very happy with the Intel card. It's real good.
Yeah, and we got, like, gold support, too. So if it dies, they have to give me a new one in 4 hours, you know.
Do you want me to call do you want me to call the guest?
Yes, please.
The guest! There you go. Called him.
Had to find out where that... Okay.
In rare form, I have been fielding all of those nasty Graham emails that I've been getting. How about you, Pat? Did you get any nasty Grahams?
I actually got a couple positive ones.
I got a couple positive ones, but I got a fistful of... It's full of retards, too.
It must be just your magnetic personality, like.
Must be, you know?
You track all the nut jobs.
I'm too abrasive for people or something. Am I abrasive? Screw you!
You sound like Dan when he was...
I'm not abrasive! Screw you! You bastard!
That sounds just like Dan when he was drunk.
It does, kind of. Only I'm not showing anybody my ass.
You're scaring people, man.
I remember Greg coming up to me. He's like, dude, you got to do something with Dan. He's got the drink tickets and no one wants to go
Get
him. All right, man, I'll take care of it. Not a problem.
And what happened the night after?
I know you would be showing his ass to everybody later on, you know?
Hey, Steve, you there?
Yeah. How's the guy?
How you doing?
Hey, Steve.
Pretty good.
All right, I'm so excited. And I just can't hide it. Come on. just to let you know, we are going to start the show intro music. It's about a minute and a half of nonsense, and then we will introduce you and get right into it.
Then we get 2 hours of nonsense.
Yes. I don't know if you ever listened to our show. We're very loose. We have no restrictions. We don't impose any restrictions on our guests. So just, you know, hopefully enjoy yourself, all right?
Okay, will do.
Excellent. You guys ready?
Let's do it.
Do it to it. All right. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.